Funding for Think comes from SMU's Continuing and Professional Education.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. What are the greatest threats to the prosperity of women in the developing world, and how are those same women learning to fight back? While issues like salary inequity and sexual harassment are treated with great concern in the United States, women and girls in other parts of the world are quite literally struggling to stay alive in cultures where they are viewed as second-class citizens, less worthy of legal justice, education, and even medical treatment than men and boys. Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist Cheryl Wudunn and her husband, New York Times columnist Nicholas Kristof, have traveled the world to meet with women who have been abused, enslaved, and undervalued, and along the way discovered extraordinary stories of the courage and determination they've mustered in their fight for equality. Their book is called Half the Sky, Turning Oppression into Opportunity for Women Worldwide. Cheryl Wudunn will be in Fort Worth tomorrow to address the annual Planned Parenthood of North Texas luncheon, and we are pleased to have her on the show today to talk about her work. Cheryl, welcome to Think.
Oh, it's a pleasure.
So the statistics are shocking, but it's the stories that really stick with you. Did you know from the beginning that that's what this book would be about?
We've always been storytellers in our journalism, so I think that that's just something that we started out when we wrote this book. And what we actually realize is that you have to do both. I think the stories are not enough because you have to persuade people, and you can do that with both stories and statistics. So the weaving is what's magical.
The title of the book is from a wonderful Chinese proverb, which is that women hold up half the sky. It's so ironic, though, given that China is one of the countries in the world where men outnumber women for reasons that have nothing to do with nature.
Well, men do outnumber women for reasons that start at birth. When Chinese, it's, you know, everybody knows this, that Chinese families traditionally have favored boys over girls. And so they've done whatever they can to make sure that they have a baby boy. Most of us here in the U.S. think, well, what could you possibly do? Well, there are a number of things, specifically ultrasound, and they just have no bones about just going and aborting what they think will be a baby girl.
Mm-hmm. And that's supposed to be illegal now in China and in India, but the problem there is that when you make it completely inaccessible, then infanticide rises.
Well, it's not as so much that infanticide is rising, and actually it used to be fairly frequent where they would just take, you know, a baby girl's, you know, head and just dunk it into a bucket of water. Mm. But actually, it isn't so difficult to be able to get access to an ultrasound. And so, unfortunately, you know, it still goes on. And the sex ratio at birth is still very, very skewed.
You've met with these people. What happens when you talk to a woman who says she would rather have a son than a daughter, or that she would? There's a photograph in the book of a starving child, and the mother says, "Well, all the boys in the family are eating just fine." I mean, is there a sense that, I mean, it's hard as a mother to imagine not feeling the same way about a child based on gender?
Well, you know, when you're living in those cultures, it's almost accepted as, you know, the norm. When I was in China and I was pregnant with my son, my first son, people were always, you know, looking at me, say, "Oh, I'm sure that it's a son. Just the way you're walking, it's definitely a son." And then when I actually had a baby, I would tell people, "Oh, I had a child, I had a baby," and they would say, first, before they congratulated me, they would say, "Oh, is it a boy or a girl?" And of course, when I said it's a boy, "Oh, congratulations!" So it was. You could just see it's just ingrained.
What about the issue with education? I mean, clearly there are many parts of the world where money is extremely limited. But, you know, it's been pointed out by multiple people that when you don't educate boys and girls equally, you're basically wasting half the labor force. Is that starting to creep into people's understanding?
I don't think that it's really on an individual level in people's consciousness. At a national level, I hope that it is making inroads. We certainly have seen China as a role model in many ways. Look, China's a really complicated country, and it's very hard to say, you know, it's on balance good, bad. But in this particular area, it was phenomenally successful. They basically were able to eradicate foot binding nearly 100 years ago. China back then was one of the worst places to grow up being female. But they eradicated foot binding. And then over the decades, they said, well, you know, people can go to school. And that means girls, too. So they let the girls go to school. And then what is really, really critical, they also let the girls go to work. They let women enter the workforce, which is not actually the case in a lot of other countries that do educate their girls.
Hmm. One thing that's fascinating in this book is the idea that when women are in charge of the family purse strings, children tend to fare really differently. And obviously, this is it's a generalization. But can you talk about the differences in developing countries?
Yeah, it is quite interesting. You know, it sort of touches on one of the secrets of poverty. It's not just that people who take in very little take-home pay are poor. That is one key reason. But the real, deciding factor also is that it's how they spend that money. And often they spend it very poorly. They're not educated to spend it wisely. So on studies that have been done on people who live under $2 a day, which is one measure of poverty, if you look at, the top five things, 20% of take-home pay goes to a combination of alcohol, cigarettes, sugary drinks, prostitution, and elaborate festivals. And that's often when the purse strings are controlled by men. So if you just took a little bit of, a few percentage points and put it into another bucket called education, that would make a dramatic difference. And it is shown that women tend to put more money into food, healthcare, and education.
So does this change require educating men as much as women? I mean, we think about women's empowerment and it's sort of only on one side of the gender spectrum. But in fact, we have to have everybody understand what's going on.
And Chris, that's a key point. It really, what we're asking and what we're actually throwing out the challenge is for social change, which means men and women working hand in hand, side by side. You can't bring about social change without men as well. It can't just be women, and it shouldn't. It's just that we want to focus on women because they have been underrepresented, they've been neglected, and that's why it's important to actually elevate their status. But whatever happens, any kind of policy change, any kind of grassroots movements really has to include men.
Well, it's interesting when you talk about policy change. We've seen certainly in this country with the history of dealing with racism that you can change the law and then changing the way people think takes a lot longer. Is there a way to craft laws that somehow speed this process along, or is it really a matter of one person, one generation at a time?
Oh, it's really iterative. I don't think that you can change a law and have it put into practice. I mean, there have been places where, in Africa, for instance, female genital cutting is banned by law.
It happens thousands,
but it happens
of times.
Anyway.
Yeah.
So it's not enough to change the legal books. What you really need is demand for change coming up from the bottom and grassroots change. And then the politicians will listen. And then they need to formulate the policies that will institutionalize the change that is being demanded. So it's iterative because then those laws then have to be implemented by the people who are demanding them. So it really does need to be iterative, and it has to come out. Change has to come from every angle.
How much progress have we made in terms of giving women good access to birth control and family planning?
Well, it depends on where you're talking about.
Yeah. Well, there are different realities in different parts of the developing world.
Right. In certain areas, it is easy. For instance, in China, it is very easy to get access to birth control. All types, too. In Africa, it is much more difficult. It's a very poor place. It's not something that the government has made a necessity. So it is much more difficult. I was just in Haiti a month and a half ago. And I met a woman with basically 11 kids. Mm-hmm. She actually had 13, but two died. And we asked her about birth control. She goes, "Oh, yeah. Yeah, I don't really want to have any more kids, but, what can I do?" They don't know anything about where to get birth control. And then they couldn't afford it if they actually did know.
And of course, there's also the connection between infant mortality and a lack of birth control. If you're not sure that all of your kids will survive past the age of five or certainly to adulthood, you might be more reluctant to limit the number you have.
Yeah, there is some of that mentality. But, when you're at 11 kids, I think you do know that, you're not going to have enough food to spare. And certainly some of those kids had not eaten for a couple of days. And that's the way they live. They sometimes go a day or two without eating.
Are girls in different parts of the world punished differently than their brothers are?
I'm not sure exactly what you mean, punished. I mean, certainly they're neglected. Mm-hmm. But, you know, whether they hit them with the belt because they've done something wrong harder than the boys, that's really, you know, up to the individual family. I don't think that's, so to speak, a practice. But what is a practice is the neglect. So in other words, they aren't really sent to school because it costs money to send them to school. And often the family says, well, we only have this much money. We're going to pay for our sons to go to school all the way up to high school. The girls, you know, they're just going to be helping around the house. Why should we send them to school and waste the money?
Cheryl Boudin is my guest. She's a Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist and co-author of the book Half the Sky, Turning Oppression into Opportunity for Women Worldwide. She's in town to address the 2011 annual Planned Parenthood of North Texas luncheon that takes place tomorrow in Fort Worth. You can find more information online at ppnt.org. We will be back to our discussion with Cheryl in a couple of minutes. Right now, I welcome in Justin Martin, who is an afternoon local host of All Things Considered. Hey, Justin.
Good to see you, Chris. It is an excellent day. We've made a lot of progress, but we can get this started even faster if you call 1-888-694-6931 or go to KERA.org.
Your contribution to the station allows us to continue to bring you the topics that you are interested in. And the wonderful thing about doing a show like this, Justin, as you know, is that we don't focus on any one thing all the time. It's science and history and current events and human rights and politics and arts and ethics and just everything that you could possibly think about. We love having you as an audience, and your interest in all of these topics really does sort of carry us along. But we would fall very quickly if your dollars didn't also carry us along. Your support is critical at 1-888-694-6931 or online, even better because it's a little less expensive for us, frankly, to process those donations, online at KERA.org.
And there's a whole plethora of thank you gifts if you want a mug or a T-shirt or a tote bag or a whole ton of great stuff. You can go to KERA.org and look there, or when you call 1-888-694-6931, you can ask the representative to answer any question that you have. It takes a couple of minutes, but it goes a really long way to keeping programs like Think Strong here in North Texas, so we continue this tradition of excellent programming, journalism and reporting, and some entertainment. 1-888-694-6931 or KERA.org.
For today, Justin, we actually also have copies of the book Half the Sky. Ooh. By Cheryl Boudin and Nicholas Kristof. That's available as a thank you when you make a contribution at the $120 level or above. You can do this on the website just directly with a debit or credit card. You can set up a sustaining membership, which basically, if you say, okay, my membership is $120 for this year, we take $10 a month out of your account. Or you can also arrange to write a paper check if you prefer to do things that way. We have a fewer and fewer of you like to do it that way. I haven't written a check in I don't know how long, but however you want to choose to pay is up to you. Whatever amount you want to contribute to the station is up to you, but your support is critical in keeping us objective and fair and available here in North Texas at 1-888-694-6931 or online at KERA.org.
Whether it's Think with Chris Boyd, All Things Considered, Morning Edition, This American Life, Radiolab, any of the great programs that you hear on KERA 90.1, your contribution goes directly to supporting those programs, keeping them on, and allowing us to continue broadcasting in the community. Your contributions have done that over the years, and we're asking you now to help the station that you rely on to continue its mission. 1-888-694-6931. As always, you can go on to KERA.org and do your part to keep us strong.
This is, of course, a not-for-profit organization, so if you're starting to think about your 2010 taxes, think ahead to 2011 tax season if you could bear it, and know that your contribution is tax-deductible. If you don't take a thank-you gift, it's entirely tax-deductible. If you do, then you just need to subtract the amount, the fair market value of the gift itself. But that's up to you, but it's something to think about when you think about being able to add those deductions in, and also do a good thing for your public radio station. Go online now to KERA.org or call 1-888-694-6931. Again, you might choose as a thank you gift at the $120 level or above a copy of Half the Sky, Turning Oppression into Opportunity for Women Worldwide. We'll resume our conversation with Cheryl Boudin in just a couple of minutes.
Funding for Think comes from SMU's informal courses for adults, dedicated to enriching lives for 55 years. How about enriching yours? You can learn more at smu.edu/CFP.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. My guest this hour is Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist Cheryl Wudunn. We're talking about her book, Half the Sky, Turning Oppression into Opportunity for Women Worldwide. She's in town to address the Planned Parenthood of North Texas annual luncheon tomorrow that takes place in Fort Worth. You can find information at ppnt.org. If you'd like to join the conversation, 1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. The email address is think@kera.org. Cheryl, I want to talk about a problem that is not even well known in the West because we don't have it here and is a huge scourge, particularly in Africa, and that is something called fistula. Can you
right.
talk about what happens there?
Right. Well, it happens in developing countries that don't where women don't have access to health care. And in fact, while we think here in the West that childbirth is just a glorious thing, in Niger, a place like Niger, 1 in 7 women can expect to die in childbirth during their lifetime. For those who survive, there are 25 women who actually end up with an injury. Much of that is because they don't deliver in a hospital. They deliver wherever they can, in their town, at home, or with a traditional birth attendant. And fistula is a condition where basically a hole, the labor, the process of the child during labor trying to descend actually rips a hole in the woman's insides. And so she actually becomes incontinent, which means she can't control her waist. So you can imagine what that means for a woman. And she ends up becoming an outcast in her community.
That's the worst. I mean, as much as the physical discomfort would be horrible, essentially that happens and a woman knows she's out on the street in many cases.
Oh, people don't really know what to do with her. They really becomes an outcast. She isn't wanted in any communities, no markets. The buses won't let her go on because she really does stink. And it's not as though she can take a shower mm-hmm. every day. They just don't even have showers. They don't have hygiene there. So you can imagine in many places in Africa where healthcare delivery is just sparse. Thank goodness, there a lot of the healthcare is actually delivered, by missionaries and by the church. So thank goodness for some places where 95% of the healthcare delivery is done by the church. There are some places that will actually deliver maternal health care, and so the rates of fistula are lower. But unfortunately, in certain places, there are hospitals just dedicated to attending to fistula patients.
What's really extraordinary, we should say for people who are concerned about this, this is not an incurable condition. With proper care, a woman's body can be repaired. In some cases where there are not MDs available to make these repairs, people are being trained just to do this procedure, and it's been pretty successful.
Oh, absolutely. In fact, it's really a $350 operation. Mm. It's not that expensive. And there are women, of course, in those areas. Doctors are very few and far mm-hmm. between. So you do need basically nurse practitioners who can be trained to do some simple fistula operations, and they are. So you go to these fistula hospitals. There's one, the Addis Ababa Fistula Hospital in Ethiopia, and there are very, very clever nurses who actually can do the operation as well. And thank goodness for them, because there are hundreds, if not thousands, of patients that they see. And one doctor, certainly, if there is a doctor, one or two doctors can't attend to them all.
So you say $350 operation. In this country, we say, great, let's do it tomorrow. In many parts of the world where this is a problem, that's more than people could expect to make over a couple of years. Where is the money coming from for the women who are getting this care?
A lot of it is coming from, donations from Americans. I mean, mm-hmm. just bless those Americans who are sending the money in. It's wonderful. But there are, government is supporting some of the local governments are helping a little bit, but a lot of it is coming from private donations and from really hard workers. It's not just the financial donations. It's the foreign doctors, the local doctors who are dedicating their lives day in and day out to help these women.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. You can also send email to think@kera.org. We have an email here from Amy who writes, I have read Ms. Wudunn's book and found it extremely compelling. I'm interested in learning more about your comment in the book concerning study abroad programs for college students.
Yes. I think that it's a great opportunity. In fact, one of the things that we do encourage is for young kids to see the world. Being able to get to college and having that opportunity is a wonderful opportunity. But I think that you enhance just your own, curiousness of the world, and you also enhance your career by traveling around and see how other people live. It will just give you a different perspective, not only a greater appreciation for here, but help you decide on what you might want to do in a career. And sometimes, even if you choose a career in law or banking or medicine, you might be able to help on the side somewhere in a different country. We're just gratified that, our own son is also studying abroad.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. You can also send email to think@kera.org. I want to talk about sexual violence against women, because there are parts of the world where this is, if not condoned, certainly a blind eye is turned to attacks on women. You have a story in the book about a Pakistani woman in Mukhtar Mai, and I wonder if you can tell us a little bit about what happened to her and what she did with that experience.
Yes, Mukhtar Mai. I mean, her story is incredible. She herself was just, living in a village in Pakistan, and her brother actually got involved in a scandal. And so, partly because of local custom, what they did was the village elders get together and they actually, put out a punishment for the brother. Part of the punishment was that the sister got raped. Mukhtar Mai should get raped as part of his punishment. Huh. So a bunch of men in the village gang raped her. And then, of course, what normally should happen in that circumstance is that Mukhtar Mai should have committed suicide, mm-hmm. because it is just a disgrace to the entire family that she was raped, even though it had nothing to do with her fault. It was not her fault at all. And so she actually said no. Her parents also agreed with her. No, she wasn't going to commit suicide. And in fact, what she did was she sued. She sued all the way up the ladder. And finally, it got so much attention that President Musharraf, who was president at the time, gave her a pardon and sent her some money in compensation. So she took that money. And normally, you think, oh, well, she takes the money, she'll build a house for her family, whatever. She took that money and she didn't buy an iPod. She actually built a school to teach English, to teach girls. She built a school to teach girls. She took her, hard-won money and donated it to a cause that really she saw. It was just foresightful. She saw was really, really needed, sorely needed in that village. She became immediately a role model, and she became a heroine for many women in the area. They all started making pilgrimages to see Mukhtar Mai, the woman who actually cares for other women and actually set out to do something about it.
Hmm. She became a role model, and then she became sort of a thorn in the side of the Pakistani government.
Well, thanks to Glamour magazine, they gave her an award and offered her travel to the U.S. And so, Mukhtar Mai, who lives in this remote village in Pakistan, who had never even traveled to the main city, had to get a passport to travel overseas to the U.S. And she had been denied. And finally, after much pressing by actually then Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice, the Pakistani government was shamed into letting her out.
It's one thing, you hear a story like that and you think, well, of course a woman would be at least want to fight back, even if she didn't have the power to do so. But there's a sort of attitude that is extraordinary. If you've been raised in a society that says you don't deserve this, that you, if your brother commits a crime, you deserve to be punished in this unspeakable way. Is there something different about the women who are able to stand up to an entire culture and maybe thousands of years of history and say, no, not anymore, not me?
That is what a social entrepreneur is. Mm-hmm. And Mukhtar Mai is really a social entrepreneur. It takes enormous foresight, courage, guts to stand up against tradition. I mean, that's tradition of centuries. And she did it. And so, I only have admiration for her. I mean, it is really hard to imagine whether if I were in her shoes, what would I have done? It's really hard to imagine in this day and age that there is such an oppressive culture and that there is someone who is willing to stand up against it.
You talked in the beginning of the hour about the importance of blending stories with statistics. The one that floored me that I still can't quite get through my head is that the human trafficking problem today is taking place at a greater volume than at the height of the transatlantic slave trade.
Oh, yes, that's really a remarkable statistic. And in fact, statistics also are very hard to come by, but the statistics that we do have are that the peak of the slave trade, maybe 80,000 slaves were transported to the New World a year. Now, across international borders, according to the State Department, and again, these are very, very rough estimates, mm-hmm. and if anything, they underestimate what the real number is, trafficking across human borders is about 10 times that amount, 10 times that amount, 800,000. And that's not even including people who are trafficked within borders, which tends to be the case in much of Southeast Asia and other places because people are moved from one part of the country to another part of the country. They don't even count as a statistic.
And in many cases, it's not just adults, it's children.
It's girls, 12, 13, I've heard as young as 9, but it's also boys. I mean, for labor, it's unfortunately for sex as well. It's a really insidious trafficking problem. And unfortunately, it's not just happening overseas out there. It's also happening in our country, in the U.S. and in Texas.
What do we do about getting at the demand side of this problem, which is the part that sort of makes you the sickest?
Yeah. We have traditionally authorities, the police authorities have focused on the supply because it's easier to track. It's mm-hmm. easier to catch the suppliers. It's very hard to catch the anonymous Johns, so to speak. Sweden actually has developed a punishment for the Johns, and it's actually working extremely effectively. So we really do need to consider adopting some kind of punishment for the Johns, because frankly, as long as there is demand, there will be efforts to satisfy it with supply.
Cheryl Woudun is my guest. She's a Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist and co-author of the book Half the Sky, Turning Oppression into Opportunity for Women Worldwide. She's in town for an address tomorrow to the 2011 Planned Parenthood of North Texas annual luncheon that takes place in Fort Worth. You can find information at ppnt.org. We will be back to our conversation with Cheryl in a moment and invite you to join that conversation by calling 1-800-933-5372 or sending email to think@kera.org. Now, as I see Justin Martin strolling back into the studio, we want to pause for just a couple of minutes and talk to you about the importance of supporting journalism and objective coverage in your community that reflects not only what's happening here in North Texas, but realities around the world. We're able to provide this to you because of your financial contributions to KERA.org and at 1-888-694-6931. Hello again, Justin.
Hello, and it's true, Chris, that authors like this, compelling stories like this, wouldn't be on this station at any point in the day if it wasn't for the contributors who for 37 years have allowed the station to maintain this quality of, of programming. Excuse me. 1-888-694-6931 is the number you call to do that. We've relied on you over the years to help us continue our mission, and we know you can step in right now and do that. If you just take a couple of minutes and pick up the phone and dial 1-888-694-6931, or you can go online to kera.org.
One of the things that's really nice about this format is that we're able to speak to each of our guests. You know, it's a two-hour show every day, and each hour is treated separately. We can speak to a guest like Cheryl Woudun for an hour. We don't have to condense this extraordinarily important and serious work into, 10-second sound bites stuck into a 1.5-minute package. There's nothing wrong with that format. For what it is, sort of headline news formats, they provide a service, and we have no quarrel with our colleagues in commercial news. But we do something different here on public radio, and it's something we're proud of. It's something that we know that you've responded to. The fact that we don't have, 20, 25 minutes of commercials running in every hour, with the exception of these fundraising campaigns,
indeed,
I suppose, allows us to really delve into things that deserve attention and thoughtful conversation. Your support at kera.org or at 1-888-694-6931 makes that possible. I want to thank Loretta Weber in Fairview for her contribution today, Hunter Ekvall in Dallas, and Doug Wright in Plano. We would love to read your name on the air. If you don't want us to read your name on the air, you have the ability to tell us that too if you want to stay under the radar.
1-888-694-6931. Contribute at whatever level you're comfortable with. It could be the dollar a day, $365 level, $90, $400, whatever level is you are most comfortable with. It goes a very long way to supporting public radio. It, in conjunction with the other contributions, have paid the bills over the years. Keep in mind, a little over half of our funding comes directly from you, our contributor, and it's absolutely vital that you take just a couple of seconds and call 1-888-694-6931. Or, of course, if you have an internet-enabled device, you can go to KERA.org, look at all the thank you gifts. Most importantly, though, the money supports public broadcasting here in North Texas.
I have to say, Justin, I love the way your mind works. Other people might have said $90, $100, $200. You said $90, $400.
I'm all over the dial there.
and the truth is we have folks who send us $10, and we have folks who send us $10,000. And you know what your budget is. And honestly, you know how much you listen and maybe how much you pay for other media sources, how much you spend on books like the ones we talk about on this show very often. Today, by the way, I wanted to remind you that if you make a contribution at the $120 level, among the thank you gifts you can choose is a copy of Half the Sky. That's Cheryl Wu Dunn's book, co-written with her husband, Nicholas Kristof. It is available when you go online at KERA.org, or you can also get a copy when you call 1-888-694-6931.
1-888-694-6931. Chris was saying earlier, you get uninterrupted access to the station. More program content is available because of these membership campaigns. Last night, we had the Presidential State of the Union. We had the Republican response. We had thoughtful analysis after that, even into the BBC and into this morning. Later this afternoon, we'll have some updates from the KERA news team. You know that whenever you tune into KERA, especially during Think, you're going to have compelling information, stories that are going to keep you glued to the radio, and your contributions make that possible. It's that simple. 1-888-694-6931 or KERA.org.
The terrific thing is when you make a contribution to this not-for-profit, North Texas-based, owned and operated institution, you hear where your money is going. It doesn't sort of drop into somewhere and you have no clue. You tune in every day and you hear. What you're hearing right now is the result of someone's contribution that came before you and said, yes, I listen, I believe in public radio and the values it espouses, and I want to be part of the team that makes it possible. Your contribution can come in now via email, via the web at kera.org or at 1-888-694-6931. Thanks to Annabeth Ballard in Heath, Texas, and Karen M. Anderson in Dallas and Cameron Phillips in Fort Worth. They've made their contributions, maybe with a debit card, maybe with a credit card, perhaps setting up a sustaining membership. All those choices and the amount you want to spend are up to you, but we do ask everyone who listens on a regular basis to please get in touch with us now and make a contribution. Thanks.
Funding for Think comes from SMU's informal courses for adults, dedicated to enriching lives for 55 years. How about enriching yours? You can learn more at smu.edu/CFP.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. My guest this hour is Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist Cheryl Wu Dunn. Her book is called Half the Sky, Turning Oppression into Opportunity for Women Worldwide. She's in town for an address tomorrow to the 2011 Planned Parenthood of North Texas annual luncheon. It takes place in Fort Worth. You can find details at ppnt.org. Let's go to the phones now at 1-800-933-5372. We have Jake on the line in Dallas. Hello, Jake.
Hi there.
Hi there.
Yeah. The comment I just wanted to make is I wanted to support a statement that your guest made. I was, a victim of child prostitution for 5 years of my life right here in Texas. I mean, it was in San Antonio, not very far from here. But you know, this does happen right here. I mean, it was like a machine shop, and it was a legit machine shop, but only a quarter of the building was used for that, and it was right in the middle of like a somewhat busy industrial area. So. You know, this, and there were more girls than boys there, but, this does, I just wanted to support this, you know, this does happen right here, where we live.
Well, I appreciate your call, Jake, and it sounds like you're doing okay now. Is that accurate?
I'm doing much better.
Yeah.
I had to go back on disability again as I kind of had a new layer of stuff come up in my therapy, but I mean, you know, 18, 19 years of therapy now, kind of working through this and, you know, a lot of people are kind of like, well, you know, why are we have to pay all this money for your disability and for this and that? And I was like, well, if the laws were being enforced, I could be much more productive. But I've had productive periods where I've earned very good income and, you know, kind of paid into the system that's you know, enabling me to get therapy now.
We certainly wish you the best, and I really appreciate you, making that call. You know, Cheryl, Jake brings up an interesting point, which is that even when people are rescued from these abusive situations, it's not like suddenly they're in a safe place and everything's fine again.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, these things can haunt someone for years. I mean, as you know, thankfully Jake shared that with us. It really does take a long time to overcome, and it also requires almost a village to get people to reaccustom them to normal social life. So that's why this problem is just so important, that it's a social problem that we just have to address, and it happens in our backyard and it happens in the developing world, you know, in a really insidious way as well. So this is the moral challenge of our century.
You talk about it taking a village. There's an amazing story in here of a woman who has overcome different circumstances. I believe her name is Saima, and she had an abusive husband and was sort of treated like dirt at home. Is she Pakistani? Is that right?
She's actually from a village outside of Lahore, Pakistan, mm-hmm. Yes. Saima was a very forlorn woman. I mean, she really was beaten up every day, partly because her husband didn't have a job. He was kind of unemployable, and so he couldn't get a job, and he would take his frustrations out on her. We know all that. You know, people take their frustrations out on other people, on their relatives, on their wives, on their loved ones. Well, she was feeling miserable, and then she had a second daughter. And of course, in a society that favors boys, her mother-in-law took her son aside and said, you know something? I think you're going to have to get a second wife. Saima's just not going to bear you a son. So that left her even more devastated. Just so happens at that time, there was a lending group that gave her a $65 loan.
$65.
$65, mm-hmm. Which, you know, is nothing to us, but it's a huge amount of money to someone like Saima. Saima decided to do some embroidery. She started an embroidery business. Turns out she was actually very good at embroidery. And so she became really in demand. Her embroidery sold like hotcakes. And pretty soon, when she needed help transporting all of the great embroidery stuff to the marketplace, her husband joined her. And, you know, now they're really doing very, very well. It's a really nice success story.
And she's got dozens of people working for her.
She does. Not all microlending happens that way. I mean, she just struck it rich. Mm-hmm. And, you know, more power to her. We're really delighted that there was a microlending group in the village that was making loans and making them, you know, to the right people and sort of ensuring that things were going okay and not trying to take advantage of them.
Let's talk about that, because there have been some headlines recently about failures of microlending in certain parts of the world. India is the first place that comes to mind. Sometimes it works beautifully, and sometimes, like anything else, it's open to abuse.
You know, it's funny. I mean, we here in the U.S. are ones to criticize the microlending in India.
We take macro loans here.
It's exactly the same thing. I mean, there were excesses. So there are a lot of people who are trying to rack up the amount of loans that they had on their books. So they were just lending to everybody, people who just really couldn't absorb the loan and didn't know how to use the loans wisely. So lending, again, I mean, it's a practice that has to exist. Microlending is a practice that really has to continue. But there is abuse, and so we just have to be careful in how it's carried out. But it's not to say, look, let's end microlending. No, this is a practice that is needed. People will always need loans. You know, societies always will have people who will need a loan to start them off on a new business, on, you know, opening a store to sell candy, to sell food, groceries. So it's just been, there has been some abuse. And I'm sorry that it's gotten so much press, because I think that it's been a little bit exaggerated.
There are some organizations that provide microloans to groups of borrowers, which is a really interesting idea. So you get 25 different people, and they sort of guarantee each other's loan.
There's all sorts of ways in which microlending and microsavings can actually work. Mm-hmm. In fact, one of the most successful practices is microsavings, and probably with the poorest of the poor, microsavings is much more effective than microlending, because often in the really poor areas, for instance, even in Haiti, you know, the poorest place in this hemisphere, and actually one of the poorest in the world. It is rock bottom poor. A lot of the women just can't even, they wouldn't know what to do with the loan. They just can't absorb the loan. So you turn to micro savings where they learn how to save. And when they learn how to save, you know, if you give them opportunity to sort of, you know, grow fruit and then sell the fruit, or, you know, cut down trees to chop wood and sell the wood, then they can start saving from the money that they earn. And that becomes a much better footing for them because they learn what it is to save and then to invest.
And it makes sense. You know, people talk a lot about personal responsibility, which I know you wouldn't disagree is important. But if you've always lived hand to mouth and you don't think anything additional is going to come, if you've been raised to think you'll always be poor, it's hard to understand without some assistance that saving really can add up over time.
Well, what's really important is education in any place. I mean, you know, we care about education here in the U.S. Why shouldn't they care about education in Africa, in Pakistan, in India? Education is just critical. First of all, they have to learn how to add two and two. I mean, women really have to be able to survive on their own additives, you know, adding and multiplication and subtraction skills, because otherwise they just won't even get anywhere when it comes to simple business. But obviously in most parts of the world, in many parts of the world, girls are neglected and even aren't sent to school. And so that has to change. And I think that there is a recognition of that in places like Africa and in Southeast Asia. But it's just the political will has to really, we need more of that.
Are men happier in societies where women are equal to them?
Oh, I think so. Don't you?
My husband would hopefully say yes. But, yes. You know, you have to wonder about that. When you minimize an entire half of the population, it's got to do something strange to the way everybody walks around.
Oh, I think that's definitely the case. I mean, I think that a lot of it has to do with education. And in the process of educating the girls, you're also educating the boys. We're not talking about educating the girls at, you know, and not educating the boys. We're talking about education of both boys and mm-hmm. girls. So they grow up learning how to respect boys and girls, respect each other. And I think that once you have a much more educated society, then there's growth, there's economic growth, material growth, and that's basically, you know what? In a lot of those countries, all people care about is jobs so that I can have my own, you know, means of living. I just want a job so that I can live on my own and not have to depend on handouts.
So what do we do from Dallas or Fort Worth or Keller or Denton, Texas, about all the huge problems that we've talked about today?
Well, first of all, I think it's really important to understand what the issues are. And it's not that hard. I mean, you actually just can go onto the website and, you know, put in one word. You can put in micro savings, or you can put in sex trafficking and just learn a little bit about it. And, you know, well, of course, read Half the Sky. That's
and
really
you've got
critical.
A website as well. Is it halftheskymovement.org?
Halftheskymovement.org. And what I always find interesting is when people get together with some friends and they can meet once a month and they can just talk about some of these issues and they can settle on an issue that they care about. They might all decide that, hey, we think sex trafficking is really, really a big problem both here in Texas and also abroad. And we want to learn about it in both areas. And so then they, you know, when you talk about it with friends, it's far more interesting and entertaining also when you do it with friends. And then you might stumble on a project that you'd like to embark on.
Cheryl Wudan is a Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist and co-author of the book Half the Sky, Turning Oppression into Opportunity for Women Worldwide. Cheryl, it's been such a pleasure to have you on the show today. Thank you so much for making the time.
Oh, same here. Thank you so much.
Thanks to all of you who have been listening this hour. You can, of course, always get in touch with us by calling 1-888-694-6931 to express your appreciation for this conversation and the others that we have on the show 4 days a week for 2 hours. Today we have copies of Cheryl Wudan's and Nicholas Kristof's book. It's called Half the Sky, Turning Oppression into Opportunity for Women Worldwide. It's one of the things we're featuring as an enticement to have you make a $120 contribution or more to the station. Of course, you can make your entire contribution and not receive a thank you gift and go get the book elsewhere if you choose. The important thing is that you participate in the station as a listener, but also as a supporting member, because there would be no listeners if we had no supporting members, because we wouldn't exist. Thanks to you, we are here and very pleased to be so. But your contributions on an ongoing basis are really what keep this station strong. Justin Martin joins us once again. Hello, Justin.
Hello. 1-888-694-6931 is the number to call to support the station. Of course, you can always go to kera.org. But Chris makes an excellent point. All of the programs, everything that you you hear on this station is directly there because of your contribution. And we really, everybody who comes into this job really loves what they do. We stand behind our work, whether it's a story or a program or an element that you heard the day before. We stand behind it, and we believe, honestly, in the mission that this station has. And it's a community-based organization. We want to enrich the community around us, and we do that through the programs you hear on the station. And you can support that, 1-888-694-6931, or, of course, you can go to KERA.org.
The truth is that everything that gets produced in the media takes money. Sometimes that money is raised by commercials. Sometimes it's raised directly by people who want programs made. And sometimes in the public broadcasting model, it is raised by and for the people who listen to the programming. Your support contributes 58 cents of every dollar that we spend making and producing and broadcasting the program that you value here on KERA. We could not, you know, that's the one, the number one funding source, the one we could not do without is you. And some of you come to us and become Friends members at the $1,500 level. Some of you are day sponsors at the $365 level. A number of you, you know, do $100 a year, and we have some who do 10 or 20 or the very basic membership level of $35 a year. The amount of your contribution is your choice, but we would hope that it's an easy choice to make to support KERA at 1-888-694-6931 or online at KERA.org.
And at the basic level, as Chris was saying, the $35 and above level, you get the member rewards card, which gets you access to all sorts of special events and cool things throughout the Dallas-Fort Worth area and in North Texas. And also, it does a great thing. You help support public radio here in the community. 1-888-694-6931. Consider for a moment, perhaps, how many times you reference something that you heard on KERA, here on Think, or Morning Edition, or This American Life, or Prairie Home Companion, something you heard that was really interesting that you had a discussion about, that maybe added to your understanding. That's something also that you contribute for, maybe also not just for yourself and your family, but for others in the area that may not be able to contribute at this point in time. Your contribution pays for so much, and it's so very important for the station at 1-888-694-6931 or KERA.org.
Ask yourself why you choose KERA in the hours every day and every week that you listen. You probably have a litany of reasons. Maybe you have your favorite shows. Maybe it's this show. Maybe it's All Things Considered. Maybe it's Tell Me More, the Diane Rehm Show. Whatever reasons you have for listening are exactly the same reasons that we hope you would have for making a contribution. Yes, it is true that you can flip on the radio and it seems to be free when you turn on the radio, but the content is not free. It's not free to produce. It's not free to broadcast. Certainly, you know, we don't get a deal from the electric company on the bills around here. That's okay because, you know, we want it to be the best possible. We don't want to skimp on quality. We don't, you know, want you to not get something that's the very best. But we rely on you to turn around and on the honor system, as we say, make a contribution to whatever your, you know, budget allows every year that you listen. Some of you, we know, come to us every single fundraising drive and kick in a certain amount of money. And some of you do a sustaining membership. Some of you do it once a year, and that's great. If you've never made a contribution, we would love to welcome you into the fold and allow you to be part of the team that makes public radio happen in North Texas. The place to go online is KERA.org. You can check out thank you gifts there, including copies of Cheryl Wu Dunn's book, Half the Sky, or you can call 1-888-694-6931.
As soon as we reach the goal, we are done. We go back to normal, uninterrupted programming, and we're getting there fast, but we can get there much faster if you, we're waiting on your call, if you dial 1-888-694-6931, or you can go online to KERA.org. If you have an internet-enabled device, an iPad, you're near a computer, you can go to KERA.org. It takes just a couple of minutes. It's tax-deductible. It's a great thing to do. And when you're done, you can feel good about yourself. And you've also done such a great thing to help us pay for all of these things, pay for the programming, pay for the electrical tower, pay for the broadcast. 1-888-694-6931 or KERA.org.
Your curiosity, your hunger for learning, your desire to really understand the world around you and the people within it, they're the things that bring you to public radio. I have to imagine that this is not your only source of information. You probably also read books and you go see movies and documentaries. Maybe you pay for a cable subscription. Maybe you have magazine and newspaper subscriptions. all great things. But I would ask if it's easy for you to open up your wallet and, you know, shell out $30 or $40 for a book or a magazine subscription or a newspaper subscription maybe every month, then it should be just as easy to make a contribution to KERA. We are we need the money just as badly, perhaps more, yeah. Because of the way our funding works. And your contributions really help at 888-694-6931 or at KERA.org.
I've said this plenty of times. There's a plethora of thank you gifts, from tote bags and coffee mugs. But most importantly, the money goes to supporting the programming, allowing us to continue our mission. 1-888-694-6931 or KERA.org.
Once again, at the $120 level, if you are interested in receiving a copy of Cheryl Wudunn's book, Half the Sky. By the way, this would be a great book club read if you have a book club going. You can receive that at the $120 level when you make your contribution at KERA.org or 888-694-6931. Thanks.
The Think production team includes associate producer Betsy Lewis and engineer Nilofer Arsala. Our senior producer is Jeff Whittington. Learn more about today's show, find out about upcoming programs, and download our free daily podcasts at kera.org/think. And we'd like to hear what you think about Think. Email your comments, questions, and suggestions to think@kera.org.